Another Saturday night in Berrington Brow. St Mary's, our local parish church, is holding a barn dance to raise funds, so I buy two tickets and invite Frank. Following our unsatisfactory affair last year, during which I had unsuccessfully attempted to rescue the 50-year-old Frank from the clutches of the elderly mother with whom he still lives, we have reverted to our previous arrangement of being simply barn dance partners. Since we gave up any attempt at closeness, Frank has reclassified me in the role of agony aunt and takes care to give me up-to-date news about his love life, or lack of it, despite the fact that I am really not at all interested. He has enrolled with an internet dating group, but tells me that all the women featured look like dogs. I tell him crossly that they are probably very nice people when you get to know them, and anyway, in such matters you should not go on looks, especially not as shown in those dreadful little passport photos, but on personality and common interests. Nothing annoys me more than lookist men, and I try to practice what I preach and not to judge a book by its cover, so to speak. But I have to say, Frank himself is no oil painting. You can always tell when I'm angry because I start spouting cliches. At least we still have the barn dancing in common, and it must be said that he's a very good dancer, always remembering the moves and knowing the correct way to turn. The dance is to be held in the school next door to where I live. When Frank and I arrive, most of the parishioners are sitting glumly round the room, unsure as to why they are here, and looking for all the world as if they would much have preferred to stay home and watch Blind Date. The beleaguered caller is vainly trying to encourage couples to get to their feet to make up a square set for the first dance. "Come on, girl," says Frank. "We better show them how it's done." He leads me onto the floor and we stand there alone facing the band. A few more would-be dancers reluctantly follow. There are still more wallflowers than dancers, however. People seem to be afraid of making fools of themselves and provide a variety of excuses for not dancing. Bad feet, bad legs, bad balance, bad breath. Well, breathlessness, actually. People claim to be unable to dance, confess themselves unwilling to dance, or to have no sense of timing. They announce that they possess two left feet, or have come incorrectly attired in tight skirts or shoes that pinch. They have bought tickets in order to support the church, but plan to escape as soon as decently possible after the pie and pea supper interval. The event is definitely regarded by many as something of a penance, rather than as an evening to be enjoyed. Indeed, I feel that some would prefer to go on a pilgrimage on their knees rather than attempt a strip the willow. The revelation that Frank and I go barn dancing every month, voluntarily, is greeted with astonishment. "Your friend is very good, isn't he?" says Sarah during the break. Frank is in his element tonight, as we have ended up sharing a supper table with two young women, both unaccompanied single parents. I chat with Sarah, asking her about her recent house move, but Frank has eyes only for Suzanne, with her pretty face, blonde hair and lovely figure. He gazes full of undisguised admiration as Suzanne returns to the table with her pie and peas, her skin-tight jeans and high-heeled boots showing off her elegant legs, and a figure-hugging sweater emphasising the rest of her charms. Frank is so deeply smitten that he sits out the next two dances in order to be able to continue his conversation with Suzanne, who is not dancing. Meanwhile, I grab Jim the vicar for the Nottingham swing. Then I do a hectic Cumberland square with Jeremy the churchwarden. Eventually, Frank tears himself away from Suzanne, having asked her three times if she will dance and being smilingly refused, and takes me back onto the floor. He looks down at me and begins to tut-tut and frown. "You'd really better start dyeing your hair, Jess. It's getting quite grey. It'll soon be like dancing with a badger." The caller announces another square dance, the first movement of which is to step balance on the corner. My corner person is Alistair, my solicitor, but unfortunately, setting off on the wrong foot, we succeed only in kicking each other's shins. As we exchange rueful grimaces, I hope he will not sue me for inadvertent actual bodily harm. The moves become increasingly confusing. Do-si-do your opposite, then chain for three and box the gnat, shouts the caller. Set and gypsy, chain back and box the flea. No, no, that's to your left. And people complain about legal jargon, observes Alistair. As we make our way back to my house, Frank is still in a daze about Suzanne, whose two teenage sons have arrived to escort her home. Why on earth is she on her own? She's an absolutely gorgeous figure, and her face isn't bad either. Surely she could find someone. In fact, I was just about to ask her out myself when those lads turned up. We were getting on really well. You don't have her phone number, I suppose, do you, Jess? Is she in the book? What's her surname? And that girl you were talking to, Sarah. She wasn't bad looking either, only she's very skinny. And of course, skinny women don't really attract me. I tell Frank to shut up, or he will also receive a kick on the shins. Only in this case, the defence will be unable to claim that it was inadvertent. It's useless me telling him that Suzanne does not live alone. She has her two teenage sons with her, and perhaps she prefers to be without a male partner. Many women do. It is peaceful. No one compares our appearances to dogs or badgers, and we can please ourselves. Frank simply does not accept such arguments. What woman would choose to be without a man if there were one available, seems to be his line of thinking. This is why I fell out with Frank. He is unable to meet or even see a woman in the street without embarking on a critique of her face and form, or to begin pondering over the whys and wherefores of her domestic situation. He assures me that all men think the thoughts that he speaks aloud, even if they do not care to admit it. I do not know if this is true, but at least the majority of the men I know have the decency to keep such opinions to themselves when in mixed company. To hear more about life in Berrington Brow, please go to the website berringtonbrow.co.uk and buy the books Sons and Lodgers and Berrington Brow, Memoirs of a Single Parent with a Crush.